Hi people, welcome to Gaze the Word. If you just before we start want to just check that your mobile phones are off, that would be great. Okay, thank you. This includes the author who's turning off his phone, Mars.
We're okay? No, it's... Do you want to start now, or...?
Yeah.
Yes, is it? Okay.
Okay.
Well, it's just after. Yeah.
As you know, many people write blogs. There's an awful lot of them out there. And a few of those begin to get a following. From that, very few of those blogs will people ask to write an article in a London newspaper. And fewer still will go on to be published. Having had your book published, it's even rarer for Elton John to give you a ring and say, I loved your book, can you come around for dinner? This happens to our reader tonight. I've read Dirty White Boy, and I know I'm not an innocent, I know Soho quite well, and I was really surprised at all these worlds that coexisted. And while I know there's prostitution and lots of drug dealing going on, it could be going on, you know, 100 yards away, and I wouldn't necessarily notice it. I just know it's there. So this was a real eye-opener reading the book, and it was hugely enjoyable. With real pleasure tonight, as well as Clayton, David Benson is going to be here, and they're working on a play together, and they'll be doing something from the play, performing, but also reading from Dirty White Boy, and Clayton will be here to answer questions afterwards. So if you want to put your hands together and welcome Clayton Whittlewood, thank you. Cheers.
Just got to try and get used to getting my mouth around this. Years of practice.
Moved up or down? Or yep. Oh, do you want to plump your bum against that?
Yes.
Okay,
this is going to be a bit of an informal get together. I'm going to start by telling you how the book came about. And then we're going to finish with some reading and performances, so I hope you enjoy it. Now, the book started when I met my partner down here, Jorge. I'd gone to Miami with a friend of mine called Anouk. Actually, she's right at the back there. We went on a bit of a party holiday, and it was my last night. And I don't know if any of you have had any of these holiday flings on your last night. Well, it was one of those, so it was all very exciting, and there was a lot of sex involved. And then we kept in contact, funny enough, and Jorge lived in Provincetown. Now, Provincetown is on the tip of Cape Cod. Sorry, I need to remember this, people behind me. It's on the tip of Cape Cod, and it's a lot like Soho. It's this little village, and it's an artist commune, and you get a lot of bohemian and eccentric people there. You often see a couple of shares going down the street on motorbikes, and there's a drag queen who's about 80 years old singing Frank Sinatra songs known as Ellie, and people like John Waters live there. So it's a very creative little seaside town. And Jorge had the shop Dirty White Boy there for 16 years. So when we met, I was going to visit him, or he was coming to visit me. And it got to the stage where if one of us didn't make a move, it was going to fizzle out. Now, Provincetown, unfortunately, or you could say fortunately for the women, it became more of a women's town, lesbian town. And without trying to sound too stereotypical, the age group of the women who were going there, the lesbians, they weren't really into men's designer clothing. So Jorge's business was going downhill. So he said, Clay, why don't you look for a shop in London? So he came over one day and we found this shop in Soho on the corner of Old Compton Street and Dean Street. And when we opened it, it started to hit me what an iconic spot it is. There's the French House across the road on Dean Street, which is where the French Resistance Party had their headquarters during the Second World War. There's the Colony Club just down the road, across the road from our shop, our old shop. where Francis Bacon and Lucian Freud and people like that used to drink. And of course, Quentin Crisp used to frequent the area. He would often drink in the Black Cat, which is now Swank, on Old Compton Street. So it's an area that's like steeped in history, and it's always had this eccentric bohemian feel to it, going back about 500 years. And of course, now it's the centre for London's sex industry and the media and the film, and of course, gay culture moved there in the 80s. So it's got all these different clashes of different cultures, and I think for the most part, apart from the Admiral Duncan episode, for the most part, everybody seems to get on there. And it was a fascinating place for us to have that shop in such an iconic, on such an iconic corner. Now, about the same time, I joined MySpace, and I know there's a few MySpace people here tonight because I can see them from here. Now, the thing is with MySpace, if any of you are members, you'll know that you end up with this collection of like-minded friends. You like the same music or the same film or the same books. And it's very different to gaydar, which is, you know, you like the same fetishes. Although my partners often refer to MySpace as intellectual gaydar, but I think it's a bit more than that. You meet a lot of like-minded people. So we were getting all these people from MySpace coming into the shop who were reading this blog I started to post up on MySpace. So as well as all the local crazy people who were coming in, there were all these MySpace people coming in the shop. And in fact, our shop was getting very, very busy, but never with anybody spending any money. It was just people coming in to say hello and get to know us, which was great for our social life, but, you know, in terms of, you know, trying to make a successful business, it didn't really help at all. Now, I'd always written, but mainly in diary form. I'd never published anything before or never shown anybody my writing, and I'd written diaries before mainly when something big was happening in my life, like a new relationship or a friend was taken ill or a new job or something like that. And I always had the feeling with the shop that we probably weren't going to be there very long, which turned out to be right. And I thought, well, I want to document this time. I want to be able to remember it, you know, in a few years' time when I'm lying in my nursing home bed and before the nurse changes my nappy. I want to be able to remember and look back on this period. So I was really writing these blogs for my own sake. There was no intention of writing a book. And I think if I'd have thought to myself, right, I'm going to write a book on Soho, that probably wouldn't have happened. So the fact that I was just really doing it for myself, and I was unaware how many people were starting to read it, and it was building up a bit of a following. In fact, I met my editor through MySpace, and you may know Rupert Smith or may know of some of his work under the name James Lear. There's some of his porn books here. So we had a lot of shared interests. And then he put me in touch with Kleist Press, this lesbian and gay publishers based in San Francisco. And they felt that the writing was a bit reminiscent of Tales of the City, Armistead Maupin's kind of writing about a local area and about the freaks in that area. And I think they felt it had the same kind of feel to it. So they offered me a deal, which was very nice. Then that led to a column in the London paper for a few months until they so rudely dropped me. And then I was invited onto BBC Radio to read some of my stories out until they banned me because I said the words cock and bumhole, and they ejected me from the building. And then they let me come back the following week, and then I said the word buggery, and I didn't realise it was a swear word to them, and they kicked me out again. So before Russell Brand and Jonathan Ross, I was already banned by the Boot. Now, so about this time, I met another really, really crazy character from MySpace, who's here with us today, David Benson.
Crazy.
You may know David from his Kenneth Williams shows, and he tours around the country with a lot of his one-man shows. The award-winning, I should say, David Benson. So we kind of got together as friends, and he was coming in the shop. We used to live below the shop, so he'd come in for a drink or a smoke or something, and then he became part of, you know, the community of people who would drop in. I think I should tell you a bit about the shop. We had a brothel above us, And we got to know the girls very well. They were very nice girls. In fact, the first time I met them, we had a leak into the shop, and we had all this expensive, you know, all these expensive clothes around us. So I ran upstairs to the brothel. There was a side door, and I said, you know, there's a leak. You know, you've got to stop it. And it was because the girls were always washing their bits in the sink and leaving the sink, you know, running. And the madam said, look, I'm really, really sorry. Can we offer you anything by way of compensation? Would you like a free blowjob on the house? Which I thought was kind of quite neighbourly. I didn't take her up on it. And there was another girl, actually. The police told me that there was a fight broke out upstairs by men queuing up. There was an article in one of the lab mags about a girl who was known as the Gobbler. And she became very popular. She was able to retire after a couple of months. So, you know, we got on very well with the girls upstairs. And the building actually is owned by a gangster family, which made it even more of a difficult period for us while we had the shop. Because it wasn't all fun. It was a quite traumatic couple of 2 years there. We had about 10 gang attacks. And we had to fend them off each time so that they didn't see us as a pushover.
Clayton, I think we need to rearrange the seating a bit here, don't you think? It's getting a little crushed. Why don't we... are there more chairs that do fit in down there?
Shall I start this all over again?
Yeah,
no, I won't.
Start
no.
From the top again.
No, I'm fine here.
Are you sure?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Are there empty seats there?
So I was just talking about the criminal element, as well as all these mad characters that attracted. It attracted quite a big a load of gangsters and people trying to attack us in the shop, and that became quite frightening at times. But we fended them off a lot because we felt that if we gave into it, then they would see us as a soft touch and they'd come back again and again. So there was a couple of times we thought we might get stabbed, but you know, I'm pleased to say we got through that. But one of the criminal elements to the shop was actually our landlord and our landlady. They're very high celebrity East End family, but the husband was in prison for murder, and the mother was in prison for tax fraud, and the son is the world snooker champion, Ronnie O'Sullivan. So we're always a bit worried about being late with the rent, you know, in case my headless body was found floating down the Thames or something like that. So, I mean, I think it brought an added frisson to the writing, thinking we're probably not going to be here very long and we may not come out alive. And I was trying to document it all as quick as I can. And like I said, it turned out to be true. We had leaks from the brothel and a mafia landlady and gang attacks, but we closed down a couple of months ago because of the credit crunch. Nobody could afford to buy the clothes, so I'm afraid, you know, the business went down. But I like to think now that the shop lives on in book form, so it's still out there, but in a different way. Now, I was going back to David. So I met David through MySpace, and I'd been to see his show, Kenneth Williams' show, about 10 years before, and I was always fascinated by the show, and I thought it was such an incredible performance. So when we became friends, I started to do a few readings, and he started to do some of the voices to some of the characters that I was writing about. And we're going to give you a few of those performances tonight. Any questions so far? No. Dumb silence. Yes, Dom.
Can you imagine revolting Dirty White Boy at some point?
I don't think so. I think we went through so much there, and it was... One of the positive things was all the people we met. You know, that there's a lot of people here that I met via the shop. But the stress of having your own business, especially in the current climate, and especially with your partner as well, that was difficult because I noticed that the takings of the shop tallied with the sex life. That was quite interesting. You know, a lot more sex when takings were high, when takings were bad. It was a case of finishing yourself off. So I don't know if I'd want to go through that again, you know, in a relationship and being in a business partnership at the same time. That was a bit of a traumatic experience. Any more? Okay. See, it's all full of people I know.
Do you ever just go and plant yourself on the sidewalk cafe and watch? Still working.
Well, I still follow all these characters. I used to write sitting just by the window, and when the lights went off out in the shop and the lights were on outside, it was like sitting in front of a cinema screen. So all these characters were buzzing around outside and they couldn't see me and they were inches away. So I saw all these hookers just outside, inches away, and people doing drug deals and gangsters, and it was great writing material. And there was something special about that little area to me. Going to a coffee shop, you know, it's still got the same feel, but that, to me, that was my little spot there. And now walking past there, it's still a bit too fresh to keep going past. So it's like, you know, when you walk past somewhere you used to live, and it brings back kind of weird memories of, and of course, because we were living below the shop as well, it's a bit raw still going back there. I'm sure I'll go back soon and really enjoy being there. In fact, I had a press launch. It sounds grand, doesn't it? Press launch, but I think there was probably the People's Friend and the Anglin Times who turned up at the Colony the other night. And that's just across the road from the shop, and it was quite nice actually being that close to the place again. It was bringing back all the memories, and a few people from the book turned up who were in the book, a few of the characters. So I don't know if I answered your question or just went completely off point then.
Are the rents in that area now so spectacularly high that only big chain stores can afford to open them? Do you see a future for the little quirky shops still in Soho?
Well, everyone always talks about Soho dying, and it'd be nice if it did now, because our book would become really but yeah, it just goes for a revival every few years. But I think the rents are, you know, spectacularly high. We were paying like 80,000 a year, and then 26,000 a year business rates, and that's before you've bought any stock or paid staff wages or anything. And you know, for us, you know, if you're Gap or someone like that, you just close a few stores. But you know, when you're an independent, then, you know, as Jim knows with this place and the troubles he's had here, then it's very difficult to make a living. And we were there 3 years, and we just managed to break even after the third year, and that was a lot of a struggle. And I think a lot of the independent shops may close down, because you know, the Algerian coffee shop next door has been there like 30-40 years. And I know people on that street that are really, and it'd be a shame if, you know, it's just full of Starbucks and, you know, and all these mass chains moving, because then you end up with another Covent Garden. And as nice as Covent Garden is, you know, we don't really want another. And I think everyone loves Soho for what it is. I mean, I was even sad when they knocked all the brothels down in Peter Street, because I've, you know, despite what a lot of people may tell you, there's a lot of girls actually there voluntarily, and they actually quite like their job, and you know, they're quite proud of what they do, and it gets them off the street and away from the pimps and the madams who look after it, you know, look after them like a family. And I think sex without, you know, Soho without sex is like the Queen without knickers, isn't it? You can't imagine it, can you? I wouldn't want to imagine it. Yeah, any more questions? Maybe I'll ask some questions. Did I see a hand go up there? Or were you just hitting your head? Okay, maybe I'll have some more later. So we're going to do a couple of, two or three readings from the book with the gorgeous Mr. David Benson. And we're going to start off with a character called Leslie. Now, David, being the actor that he is, he can obviously remember all these lines after.
Don't bank on it. This is really a work in progress, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't ever performed this officially, but there's a couple of scenes here that we've never done before, so to try it, bear with us. Are you going to use the script?
I'm going to use the script, because I need to remember my own words. You don't, and I'm not going to use a mic, because it'll seem funny if
no, we can't have the mic. Yeah, this is theatre.
So just check. You just need to project. Can you hear right at the back? Yes. So as long as you project, it's
yes. Bowl it down there.
For your good self, Clayton, bodies absorb sound.
Oh, okay.
So if you're just talking normally, so it's just belt it out a little.
Okay.
Sing out, Louise. Well, are there any? Do you want? Are you happy here with your back with us with our backs to you? And you, sir, are you going to be right with my arse in your face?
You can always move over there if you want. If you're going to sit there, do you want to stand there? And
yeah, I've already thought about.
Do you want to go over there, Tim?
Yeah, give us. We'll have a little. We'll have that as our stage, okay. And then we can. Because you have to imagine, do you not, that this is the shop,
yes.
That this is Dirty White Boy, And do we, should we do the description of how?
Yes, let's use the mic for a second. So for those of you who didn't know our shop, which is a shame, we could have sold you some really it was, let's have a look. So this side is Old Compton Street. At the back is Dean Street. No, sorry, Old Compton Street, Dean Street. Is that right?
I think so, yeah. The entrance would be over there, would it?
Yeah, the entrance right at the back.
All along here you'd have all the fancy knickers and stuff. And then the posher stuff getting around. Right, Jorge is down here. He should really describe the shop. He designed it.
I'm tearing this one apart.
He's tearing this one apart.
Just leave it on the floor,
down. The whole thing's collapsed. Yeah. Jorge designed everything. And there was a little change rooms up at the back there.
Yes, that's all quiet. Yeah.
Tell them about the changing
rooms. Well, the changing room saw a lot of action, actually. There's a lot of people used to come in just to use the changing room.
Like Mr. Ben.
Yeah, we'd get some straight men would come in. I think they thought this was a great place to flash their wares. And so they would come in and try on a pair of shoes and then come out with just the shoes on and a bit of underwear. You know, saying, does my bum look good in these shoes? And, I mean, of course it was all... great, but you had to look and not touch. But the straight men were, you know, fascinated. You could tell that they, you know, pulled themselves a bit, you know, inside the changing room because they all came out looking quite pleased.
Looking at their best.
Yeah, so we had a lot of people in the shop, but most were coming in to get to know us, or the other half seemed to be coming in just to use the dressing rooms. So the dressing rooms would be back over there on the...
Yeah.
On the right. So
okay.
Then downstairs we'd have the counter here, for instance, and then just below us there was an entrance going down to our apartment underneath, and of course the brothel above us and water dripping down the walls from the girls washing their bits. So if you can imagine that kind of setup,
it's very like this.
Yeah, thank you.
Very evocative. Well, let's give it a go, shall we? Bear with us. Yeah, you know what you're doing.
Okay, so I'll throw my voice a bit for this one. So I'm sitting, it's a normal Saturday afternoon, I'm sitting behind the counter, looking outside, waiting for the day to begin. And then outside I notice an old man tottering past. And as he totters past...
Oh, I could do it.
Oh, he can actually...
I could totter past. Right, here we go, yeah.
Okay, he's tottering past. And then he's holding onto the door frame, and as he gets nearer, I notice him patting down his wispy grey hair as he gets closer.
They're getting rid of the fags.
I'm sorry?
I don't mean us, dear. They're not getting rid of us. I mean the smokes, you know. No smoking in public. Starts next week. Never thought I'd see the day. Could you believe it?
Oh, yes, of course, I'd almost...
Thought I'd see the day. I mean, where are we supposed to smoke now? In the loos?
I'm not sure.
Oh, no, you can't smoke in the loos round here, dear. Not round here. Too many men in there doing the business.
You're probably right.
Yes. Oh, the air would be thick with smoke. Thick with it. We'd have to feel our way round the bogs. Of course, the queens would love it. But what about those of us who just want the urination? What are we supposed to do? Oh, no, you can't smoke in there, dear. Can't have smoking in the loos.
Plus, it would leave a bit of a smell, I think, wouldn't it?
Yes, well, there's always going to be a bit of a smell in there. It's a bog. What do you expect? I couldn't bear it in mine. My loo's sparkling. Always has been. Well, I mean, you never know when you're going to have the guests in, do you? The visitors. Imagine them leaving and saying, did you see the brown? Oh, I couldn't bear it. Couldn't think of anything worse. I use the bleach.
Oh, yes.
I can't compete with... That's the way to make an entrance. Why didn't you come filter down this
way? Yes.
I do want to fire your ground. Do you want to bring the seat with you?
Yes, that's a very good idea.
Sorry, slight pause here. This would happen in the shop, by the way.
The plane was delayed. Oops. Hello, gorgeous.
This is Maggie, everybody.
Plonk it down, that's fine.
Hang on, wait. This won't happen when we're on at the Royal Court. Maybe it will.
It's all good practice, isn't it, for the theatre?
Hang on, wait. Just. We can't possibly engage them.
So, did you see the brown? Yeah.
Wait a minute. Just a minute. Not yet. Not yet. That's it. Did you see the brown? Oh, I couldn't bear it. I couldn't think of anything worse. I use the bleach.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the spray one. Spray it on every night. Spray it on, leave it to settle. In the morning, it's all gone. Gets rid of it all. You could eat breakfast off it come the morning.
That's really nice. What's your name, by the way?
Leslie. And that's Les Lee. None of that Les business. Can't abide all that name shortening.
It's nice to meet you, Leslie. My name's Clayton. Please take a seat.
Oh, yes, I will over here. Yes, so lovely. I'll just rest the lallies and watch the rent go by.
I'm sorry?
The rent. Oh, come on, don't play the innocent with me, dear. You've been round the block almost as long as I have. Don't tell me you haven't seen them.
Oh, you mean the,
The third worldies, dear. The third worldies, yes, you know. The hookers. Straight off the boat and straight on the game. Shocking it is. The glosses are full of them. Oh, showing their cocks and bumholes to the world. Look, there's one now, look.
How do you know he's a...
Oh, Varda the Eek, dear. Varda the Eek. Been round for years, she has. Going round here, trolling round here for years. She's been trolling round, fiddling with the basket.
I don't think I've noticed before.
Well, you want to keep your eyes open then going through life with blinkers on.
So where is it you live exactly?
What's that got to do with the price of eggs? Bloomsbury, if you must know. Yes, and I've got my own flat as well, all paid for. And no, I'm not on the national handbag. That's what you're thinking. I live off my pension. Oh, yes. Been very self-sufficient from that for years. Thank you very much.
Leslie, I write about Soho. Would you mind if I fetch my notebook so I could take a few notes?
What for?
Well, I could write a blog about you.
A blog? You want to interrogate me and put me in a blog?
Yes, I was thinking...
Well, you can think again, dear, because I ain't divulging nothing.
Sorry, I didn't mean to offend you.
Well, you just did.
And he licks a finger, running it up and down an eyebrow, a habit he seems to perform when thinking. His expression now more reminiscent of a Gosford Park Dame Maggie.
Will my name be in this blog of yours, pay attention to me?
Yes, it will, unless, of course...
And what is it you write about, exactly? Because if it's all about bumming, I'm not interested.
No, it won't be about that. It's...
Yeah, I do have a reputation to keep up, you know. I'm a member of the Bloomsbury Association.
I promise.
And I make donations to the Royal Opera House, so I don't want anything soiling the name. Do you hear me?
Honestly, Leslie, it's nothing that would compromise your reputation. Mm.
So what is it, this blog of yours? One of these sex sites, is it?
No, it's nothing like that. It's more like a diary.
A diary? Oh, she wants to put me in her diary now, does she? And who's going to be reading this diary of yours?
Well, anyone who wants to, really.
Anyone? You write a diary for the whole world to see. Who do you think you are, Anne Bleeding Frank?
Leslie, I just want to ask you a few questions on Soho. You know, the history, because I think there'll be some people who are quite interested in learning about it.
Oh, really? And who might they be?
My MySpace friends, for a start.
Ducky, I haven't got a clue what you're talking about. Your space friends live on another planet, do they? All right, go on, get your notebook then, if you must. But remember, nothing on...
The bum thing.
The bum, yes. Part two. Ah... There's memories, you know, in this shop of yours.
I'm sorry?
I said there's memories in this shop of yours.
You know this shop?
Oh, of course. I've been coming here for years, dear. Yes. Of course, it wasn't a shop in those days. It was a restaurant. Italian. What was the name? Torino, something like that. Nothing posh, but it was somewhere to be seen. It was full of gangsters and celebrities.
And this is where you used to eat?
Yes. Just here.
Really?
Of course, really. Do you think I'm making it up or something? Just here.
where you write this little diary of yours, dear, by the window. This was my spot. I sit here for hours just watching the trade mince by. And of course, this is where I met Charlie.
Charlie?
Charlie. He was a writer too, Charlie. Used to write about art, pop art, you know, that sort of thing. I used to say to him, dear, if you can't hang it on the window, I'm not on the wall, I'm not interested. But he was very, very creative, was Charlie.
In what area?
Well, in the bedroom, mainly.
Why, what did he do?
I'm not telling you that, you filthy homo! We liked all that dressing up, you know, dressing up that sort. Don't make me think about it, really, it's too... I don't want to go back to all that messy business, you know, not at my age. That's what did the back end, dear.
So how long ago was this?
Oh, a long time ago. Of course, I was quite the dish back then, you know. Oh, yes. Foundation on the visage, all very dolly. June it was, June the 18th, 1964. He walked in. And he looked at me, and I looked at him, and that was it. That was it. It was as quick as that. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Yes.
Yes, I think I do, yeah. I forget my own lines here, sorry.
He came up, you see, and he asked if he could share my table. And then he just sat down, and I thought, bloody cheek. But that was it. It was as quick as that. The best 5 years I've ever had in my life. Sounds naff, doesn't it? But it was. But I never thought that I wouldn't have that again. Well, you don't, do you? You know, it didn't even cross my mind. We were having so much fun. And do you know, all that time, he was seeing women. I mean, really seeing them, you know, sleeping. And I just turned the blind eye, because I suppose I thought, well, I knew that what we had, he couldn't get it from them. So I just let it go. I suppose I thought, you know, well, what if I ask him to choose? Suppose he chooses the easier life. So I just put up with it. Suppose that sounds weak to you, doesn't it?
No, I can relate to that. Yeah.
And then one day I got a letter to say that he got married, and I never saw him again. Changed jobs, flats, everything.
So you've been coming back here for 40 years?
Of course I haven't been coming back here for 40 years. What do you think I am, a nun on a pilgrimage? I've avoided this street for years, ducky. But the other month I was just trolling along and I saw you tapping away in the window and it brought it all back, you know, where we met, where we used to sit.
And his words linger. It's like it's an important moment. And I go over to reach across and touch him on the arm.
Oh, you devious little witch! Dragging Miss Story out of me like that. Taking advantage of a kind-hearted old queen. You'd have the pension off me too, given half the chance, wouldn't you?
I didn't do anything.
Yes, well, now listen, if this goes in this space diary of yours...
My space?
Whatever. I want my name changed. Something exotic. Yes.
Are you going now?
Of course I'm going. What do you think I'm doing? Warming up for a yoga class.
All right, bye, Leslie.
Bye, dear. I'll see you again. Probably see you again.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, this next one.
Oh, that's yours.
It's Angie.
Yes. See if I can remember. This was a new one.
Coming back.
You're going to attack me.
No. No, I don't know if I'm a Quaker. I'm a Quaker. I'll come back this way again.
Okay, this next one is about this woman I used to see on the street. She's quite notorious in Covent Garden and Soho. And I won't tell you too much about her. You'll find out from this piece. But she appears quite a lot in the book. And her name's Angie.
See if I remember this one. This is new.
So imagine David now as Angie.
So if you saw the real Angie, you would never be able to imagine me as her. But she's something to see.
So it was back in, let me see, it was June 2006 that I first saw this next character. Something about him made him stand out. The slight mince as he walked, the way he ran his fingers through his hair, the fey voice as he chattered on his mobile. Anyway, the months trickled by and I thought nothing more of it. And then one day I noticed something different about him. It was as if he was walking more upright, more confident. Like he was aware of himself. And it seemed as the seasons gradually changed, so gradually did he. It was as if he was going through a metamorphosis. And then one afternoon...
Girl, where can I get a good backpack around here? It's for the fanny, love. I've had the cock chopped off and I need to dilate. Darling.
Okay.
Find your page.
I'm missing a pager. Oh, sorry, it's on the other side. Well, you could try Clone Zone if you...
Clone Zone, right, all right. Have you got a tape measure?
Yes, here you go.
What's 35 millimetres?
There you go.
Right, okay, I'll be right back. They are so unhelpful in there. And you want to see the size of those back plugs? My God, how do those boys do it? Must have asses like Wellington boots, dear. It's not for me, I'll tell you that. I'll tell you what, I'll give you £1 million if you can find anyone in London who's fucked Angie's ass. And you won't. Do you know why? Because nobody ever has. It's true, I can't stand it. I've never had a hemorrhoid in my life. And what is all that smacking about, you know? I mean, what is it all about? I say to my punters, I'm not having that. They say, lady, you got a problem. I say, no, honey, you've got the problem. You're the one with the hard on. Anyway, I don't do punters anymore.
Why is that?
Girl, they all want to be fucked. Even the straight ones, you know. And once you post up, they don't want to know. Anyway, who cares? Doesn't matter. Look at this. Look, have a look. Look. Go on, have a look.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. They did a good job, didn't they? Go on, have a look. Yeah. See, nice, isn't it?
Actually, they did. They did a very good job.
Yeah. And no ad-libbing, Jim. Yes.
Yes.
Nice, isn't it? Lovely.
And as she starts to reel off the procedure, from shaving to splitting the ball bag,
uh-huh.
Although I'm listening to what she's saying, my mind's going back in time.
Yeah. 5 hours out to lie there.
No, you need to use your imagination for this bit. So I'm 12 years old and it's the summer holidays. And I'm in the little village of Cheddar. My mum and dad used to work there. And I'm walking around the village exploring on my own.
Yeah, 5 hours. 5 hours. couldn't shit, fart or anything. Just had to lie there.
Now, Cheddar, it's a long, thin village, and it stretches for a couple of miles.
Yeah.
And it's like there's a big nest, there's like a cleft of rocks, and it's known as Cheddar Gorge, or it's like a mini Grand Canyon.
Of course, I didn't feel any pain or anything like that. No, I was morphined up to the eyeballs, girl. I didn't feel a thing.
So I'm walking down this narrow pass with all this wild, wiry undergrowth when it suddenly hits me. That's what I'm looking at down here. It looks like Cheddar Gorge. I mean,
no, wait.
It means...
No, wait, it looks like Cheddar Gorge. Excuse me?
I said it looks gorge. My name's Clayton.
Clayton, yes, I know who you are. I know your boyfriend, Jorge. I've seen him in the gym. Yeah?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, you've seen him in the gym. Right, okay. You were there trying to lose weight, were you?
Yeah, I was there trying to lose weight this morning at 7 a.m. actually.
You don't need to lose weight.
Girl, look at this. I'd rather die than be a fat bitch. I mean, I do crystal, but I like my sleep.
Well, I think you look great. And she did, even at 50, even without makeup. She was one of the most beautiful women I'd ever laid eyes on.
Anyway, listen, Angie's got to go now. Which way shall I go? No, I'm not going to go down Fashion Street. I've had enough queens for one day. Present company accepted, darling. Anyway, and you'll see you soon. Bye, darling.
Bye. Okay, we've got another piece for you. Is there any questions so far? So that was Angie. You've had Leslie and Angie so far. Any questions? No? Okay.
all very quiet. I don't know if you're shocked or bored or what. Right, the next one we've got is somebody called Charlie.
This is the last one.
This is the last one. Now, Charlie used to come into the shop. He was one of, luckily, he was one of the people who came in quite regularly, who actually bought something. And he was, he's an older gentleman, an ex-art lecturer. And he had a fascination with just a particular type of clothing that we used to sell. And it was our thongs. So we're going to give you a little piece now about Charlie. And he was meant to be coming along tonight. Is he here? Maybe he'll turn up a bit
just
later.
Just as well. This is another first. This is a premiere of this scene, isn't it?
Yes.
We've never done this one before.
I just need 1 minute to find my lines. You probably don't, but... Okay.
I need my cue. Okay.
So, away we go.
What's the cue line? How do you get...
So he's an ex-art lecturer, and he's one of our regular customers. He starts to become one of our regular customers.
Yes, I see you have the new L'Homme Visible range of underwear. Do you by any chance have the simulated sequin high gloss zebra print thong that I've heard so much about?
And this is true, by the way. No, we don't. That'll be part of our winter collection.
Oh, would you? Would you be able to save one for me? I'd be most grateful.
Yes, of course.
Thank you. Oh, this is lovely. My goodness me. Gold lamé. I've never seen one like that before. What do you think, the large or the extra large? I think the large. You see, if you go for the extra large, one's bits could potentially fall out. Whereas with the large, I think the goods would be cradled quite comfortably. Yes, I'll go for the large.
Would you like to try it on?
Oh, no, no, dear, no. I'll do the unveiling at home. Oh, now, oh, this is lovely. This is divine. I've never seen a tanga like that before.
I'm sorry?
A tanga, otherwise known as a G-string or thong. Not to be confused with a slip or mini-slip. Just one moment, just look in my bag. Here we are. Now, this is a mini-slip, you see. You see that? You see the extra fabric here? Yeah. And just here, around the pouch. It's all about the cut of the pouch, you see. The snug factor for the testicle, the feel of the silk against the foreskin.
Oh, okay.
You see, without this, one's bits may as well just be jiggling in a cardboard egg box.
Oh, I see, okay.
Now, this, however, where is it? There it is. This is a silk tanga. Tanga, from the Kimbundu term untanga, meaning loincloth, although it is commonly known as a thong. Very difficult to wash, though.
Really?
Yes. You must never, ever boil wash a silk tanga, no matter how stubborn the stain.
You know a lot about all this, don't you?
Oh, yes, yes. Underwear has been a great passion of mine for many, many years. Since the 60s, in fact. Such a pivotal moment in underwear history.
I had no idea.
Oh, yes, my dear. Absolutely. Yes, of course. The underwear became suddenly much smaller. The waistband dipped dangerously low. But without these upheavals, you would have never had the check stripes and cotton-flowered briefs that were all the rage in the 70s.
Well, you certainly know a lot about this kind of
thing. Yeah. I'm an homme du monde when it comes to underwear, my dear. Now, let's see. If I put this on my credit card, when my pension comes through, then I can pay it all off then. Yes, that's what I'll do.
You're going to put this on... You're going to pay for it with your pension? Your thongs, with your pension?
What was your question again?
Is that how you're going to pay for it, with your pension?
Well, what else would I do with it?
Right, okay.
You will let me know when that new range comes in.
Yes, yes. Could you just write your name down here?
Yes, of course, yes. There we are.
My name's Clayton, by the way.
Oh, hello. My name's Charles. Charlie.
Your name's Charlie?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, really.
Charlie, how long have you been coming to Soho?
Many, many years. I used to do all my socialising here. In fact, I used to come here. It was a restaurant in those days. I used to sit...
Just over here by the window.
How did you know?
Charlie, I think I know somebody that you might know. Do you know a Leslie?
You know Leslie?
Yes.
You've seen him?
Yes.
Is still alive, then?
Yes.
Do you have his phone number?
I'm afraid I don't know. But I do see quite a lot of him.
How often?
Well, he comes in every week or so.
Would you do me a favour?
Of course, yeah.
Would you give him my phone number?
Yes, yes.
Tell him... Well, just tell him to call Charlie, please. Please.
Okay.
To call Charlie. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very
much. Nice to meet you, Charlie.
Thank
you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
So if you want to know what happens to Leslie and Charlie, and if they ever meet up, for I think $8.99, yes, you'll find out on the way out. What a nice hook line to leave with. And they're all here, you can see. So the end of the story's in here. Now, are there any questions from anybody? Yes. How do the characters feel? We did this thing at the Colony the other night, and I think for the most part, people, because I don't think I write anything nasty about the people in the book. For the most part, if I'm writing about them, it's because it's an homage to those people, and they've captured my interest. I don't write about the celebrities or tend to, or you know, the Big Brother lot that walk down the street. It's more the hookers and the pimps and the down and outs and the homeless and the eccentric characters. So they're the people that I find I can paint a more vivid picture of. And if they're in the book, it's because, you know, I think I'm worshipping them rather than anything else. So I think people like, if you know, have heard of Sebastian Horsley, you know, he's, of course, you know, loves the publicity. And when I said I needed a photo for him, I've got four photos on the front of the book. Could I have a photo for the front? And he said, Clay, why not all four? And I said, no, Sebastian, I can't have four of you. So I think people like that were more than happy to be featured. Angie was, she said to me the other week, you know, she's been telling her friends that I've written a biography about her. And of course, I haven't. There's two or three chapters about her. But, you know, it was quite touching when she said that, you know, you've captured everything that I was going through during that period. I just had my sex change and I was going through therapy, and coming into your shop felt like therapy, chatting with you guys. And she said, you've captured it all without you realising, and without me realising you were taking notes of it all. That was the period I was going through. So I think for the most part, most people, I'm hoping, don't mind. Although I was in the Colony about 3 weeks ago, and this guy shouted across the bar and went, are you that dirty white boy? And I said, yes. And I'd written this piece in the book about the Colony, and I happened to mention the guy who owns Janus, the sex shop. And I said, and, you know, Peter was by the bar in the Colony drinking a pint of beer. And he said, I don't drink beer, I drink Guinness. And so apparently he was very offended by that. And the weird thing is, I'd just taken this a couple of people up there and was telling them about the Colony. I said, this will be a great place to do the press launch. They're a really friendly bunch of people up there. You'll love it. And this guy nearly attacked me when I walked up. So I'm hoping everybody takes it in the light it was meant. I think some people will be happy of the publicity. Some people, maybe the girls upstairs wouldn't want their families to know about what they do. But I think for the most part, I'm hoping that people will respond well to it. Wouldn't that be lovely? I mean, I couldn't think of a greater honour. In fact, when I wrote mine, my friend Celine here lent me this book for a couple of days about 6 months ago, called Soho in the 50s by someone called Daniel Farson. And I came across a chapter in the book. Now, he was a friend of Francis Bacon, so he was writing all about that street. And there's a chapter in the book where he talks about sitting in our shop when it was a coffee shop where Leslie met Charlie. And it was called Torino's. And he talks about the effeminate men inside the shop and the hookers on the street. And it was nice for me to think, well, 50 years later, another gay man sitting exactly the same place is writing another book on Soho. And it'd be nice to think that, you know, in 50 years from now, maybe someone picks up mine and thinks, well, this is what it was like on that street. So, yeah, that would be a lovely thought, you know, kind of handing the baton across, if that answers your question. But, yeah, you should check this book out. This is a fascinating book, Daniel Farson's Soho in the 50s. He did another one called The Gilded Glitter Life, I think, all about his friendship with Francis Bacon. And, yeah, it was just really weird for me that he was sitting in exactly the same spot where I wrote mine, and I thought it was a nice link. Hello, Don. No, go ahead. Not too difficult.
When your art speaks so directly from your life, this is sort of a two-part question. Firstly, have you ever written anything that Jorge has asked you not to publish? And the second part of the question is, now that this part of Dirty White Boy, Dirty White Boy's history has come to a close, where do you see yourself then?
Just repeat the question.
I think the first part of it was, is there anything that Jorge's asked me to censor? And the second part is, where does the writing go from here? I mean, there have been occasions where I've been writing a piece that's quite personal, and I've thought to myself, should I post this? Or I mean, I try and, when I write, forget that there are other people reading those blogs, because I think if you start to think that there are people are reading it, then you start to censor yourself. But I must say, writing those blogs was great for me because you get instant feedback. When you have a book out, you probably don't get any reviews or press for a year later, so you've really got no idea whether it's crap or good for a year. Now, with blogging, for me, it was great because you get instant feedback whether people like it or not. But in terms of mentioning, there were times when I wanted to write about maybe some of the emotional up and downs of our relationship, and I touched on it, but I think then you go through this, you know, do you want to become like an Oprah Winfrey show up there, do you know what I mean? And you don't want to, you have to hold back a bit. I think I gave enough to, so people knew what was going on with us and the ups and downs of the sex life without having to describe, you know, exactly what we were doing. So I think I was pretty honest, and I think people responded to the honesty maybe more than anything. But in terms of where I go from here, well, I was a third of the way through the second book when the shop closed, so I kind of, in a way, reached my climax after three chapters. But, you know, I still follow the same people's lives, and in fact, there was one sad story that I should talk about, because it wasn't all fun on that street. And there was one character we met in the shop who really got us through the first few months. He would come in and he would spend a lot of money. And he was an ex-Dinah Ross impersonator. And he would bounce into the shop full of life, and he would always have a QX hooker on his arm. And he was spending so much money in our shop. And, you know, of course we were grateful, but, you know, he was always introducing them to us as his latest boyfriend, and of course we knew that they weren't, and he was buying them all these lovely outfits. And then as we got to know him, we went out with him one night to a local pub, and he broke down crying, telling us about his boyfriend that he'd nursed the last few years of his life, and he'd been left with a lot of money and still a lot of love to give, and he was, you know, spending it all on people, looking for love in the wrong places. And then one day he just got late coming. We've got a lot of catching up to do. then there was one, then he stopped coming in, and he had been coming in every weekend. And then we found out that he was actually in prison for rape, which seemed really bizarre because this guy was such a frail character, and he would always come in and show me the latest dildo he'd bought, and it didn't seem to kind of fit that, you know, he'd been charged with that. So we tracked him down to prison and visited him, and it turned around that the hookers he'd been associating with had asked for more and more money, and when he said no, they cried rape, and the courts in Cambridge, who probably had no idea of hooker-client relationships, banged him up inside for 5 years. And it was such a tragic story that, you know, we'd got to know him through the shop, and, you know, I'd writing about him in the book, and then suddenly this guy was in prison. you know, and it just seemed so unjust. So we were trying to convince him to appeal, but he was, of course, suicidal when he went in there. And it took, you know, the past 2 years to convince him to appeal. And then he just started to put his appeal together when he was diagnosed HIV positive and also with cancer. And now we're actually visiting him in a hospice with a couple of weeks left to live. So it was a real emotional Greek tragedy story to kind of follow. So, you know, that makes its way in the book. And I can't even remember what the question was now.
What has he thought about his portrayal in the book?
Right, well, what he thought about it. Because, you know, I felt a bit, you know, bad at first charting this. But I thought, well, I'm writing about everybody else's journey. And it would... I don't see why I should not write about this just because it's not a pleasant journey. So when the book came out, I was telling him I was writing these blogs about him while he was in prison. And then when the book came out, I sent it to him in prison, and then all the prison wardens were reading it and all the prisoners. So it's nice to think I've got a fan base in HMP Little Hay, and it's on their library collection. But he was like, you know, honoured that somebody was taking his story and taking up his cause, and it was in print form. And now I feel that, you know, he's going to be gone in a couple of weeks, and I like to think that his name lives on, and I've done, you know, the little bit I can. And what he was really pleased of is a few weeks ago, the London paper tracked me down, and I thought they were going to give me my column back. They said, "We've got some exciting news for you." And I went, "You want to give me my column back?" And they went, "No." They said, "We've got someone trying to get hold of you." And I said, "Well, who's that?" They said, "Elton John." And I was like, "Oh, wow." And he just read the book. And one of the first things he said when he phoned up was, "How's Chico?" So when I told Chico this, you know, of course, you know, the fact that someone like Elton John was inquiring to find out where he was, it was just, you know, beautiful to see his reaction. And it's also very sad because he's going to be gone in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, that's one of the, you know, emotional roller coasters that I've been tracking on that street. And like I said, I forgot what the question was totally. Oh yes, I know what the question was. What are you still writing about? So I've been following his life and writing about, you know, him and some of the other characters we met along the way that, you know, we're still in contact with and we still know. And so I suppose the next book, if there is a next book, it's like kind of the end of Dirty White Boy and life beyond the window, kind of thing. But I'm not one for fiction, so. In fact, I'm in this bookshop now and I feel like I really shouldn't be here because I don't even really read fiction. I like biographies or history or, say, Alan Bennett's diaries or Kenneth Williams' diaries or Quentin Crisp. And, you know, I've always felt with fiction that, you know, well, I could have thought of that. I may not be able to write it as well, but I could have thought of that. So it's never really done it for me. So I kind of feel a bit weird actually being here, actually. Yeah, and maybe I'm not really doing very well plugging your books.
You're standing by the fiction section. There is queer history at the back, biography, that's politics, spirituality, Jesus Christ, we've got so much stuff that's non-fiction. It's a huge, important part. Yeah. And we sell so much stuff on history, it's really important. Yeah. I mean, I love fiction personally, but I like biography and history as well. Were there any more questions?
Can I just ask, are there plans, what are the plans around the theatrical aspect?
What are the plans around the theatrical aspects of
working? Well, I fell into this next project, again, by accident. I met David and we started to do readings and...
That's, we got thrown off the radio together.
Yes.
One of those blogs where Leslie says, "Cox and Bamo." So, that's it. Then we did another one and it was buggery, wasn't it?
Yeah,
which is a legal term, buggery. You know, how can you get thrown off for that? But that was the beginning of it, wasn't it? Really?
Yeah, well, we were having, I think, a nice little double act going. It was a bit of a round the hall moment on the radio and before we were kicked off. And funny enough, they've invited me to go back on the Robert Elms show tomorrow and do something. So
Robert Elms tomorrow, what time?
I think about midday, so I'm wondering whether I'll get kicked off again.
Yes.
But anyway, since meeting David, we've turned this book into a play, so we're in rehearsals now. And we've been talking to a TV... person, hello James in the corner. I think it would lend itself very well to TV, and I think it would be nice if it did go that far because it has got that Tales of the City type feel to it. But of course, it's all been an accident so far, and I'm quite happy with the way it's gone for so far. And if anything else happened, that's just icing on the cake, isn't it?
It's just, I mean, it's in development at the moment. We haven't got a date when we can say it's going to be on. But we're developing it, and of course, an occasion like this is enormously important because we can start to feel what goes over and what communicates. So this would be this is an important. It's like an open rehearsal we've just had, really, isn't it?
And of course, I'm working with a professional here because he learns lines in 10 minutes where I'm struggling to remember my own.
You can only do it if they're good lines to learn. You know, and these are amazing. They just sit in the mind. When you read the book, you'll find phrases stick in your mind, which I think is the sign of good writing or good reportage, if you like.
Okay, any more questions? Otherwise, it's going to come to a very quick end.
Oh, that's a good end.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. We have a... Before you go, we have a mailing list here. If anyone would like to go on the mailing list for future events, do shout. We've got lots of books that people would like. Clayton would like to sign copies, and we're here to sell if you'd like some. There is some more wine at the front, or juice or water, just do help yourself. When you're pushing back the chairs, just check your glasses that they're not about to fall over and spill, that would be fantastic. If anyone needs a loo, there's one at the back. But finally, I'd like us once again to put your hands together and thank, first of all, David. It's been a real pleasure.